afternoon. Thanks for coming back and listening so soon. Bringing the stories of everyday folks while you sit back, relax, have a whisk, coach. Here we go with the Trend Speak podcast, bringing you insight or bringing a laugh. Here's the man who might have a plan. Give it up for your host, Trent Pod Scaland.
Welcome in, friends. Whether this is your first time listening or you are an active weekly listener, welcome back to the Trent Speaks podcast and welcome to part two of Band Banter with Jared and Sammy. If you haven't had a chance, please go back and listen to episode 116, Band Banter with Jared and Sammy part one, before diving into this episode part two. Things will tend to make a lot more sense. We're going to go ahead and dive right back in, but be sure to stay tuned afterwards for a special preview of next week's episode. Have a great week, everyone. And I'm going to toss it back over to Jared and Sammy.
Individually, all of us had a separate story.
Yeah.
You know, whether it be our parents who struggled with addiction or, you know, abandonment or, you know, abuse, or, you know, everybody had a kind of a tragic story, you know, and we relied on each other because at that time we couldn't rely on our family. We were our family. And
yeah,
that's a bond that is unbreakable. So, you know, we were really there for each other. Really, you know, the countless times where, you know, life was hard, but you knew that, you know, life was hard for your brother here too, because, and you're in this together. And if you struggle, they struggle, you know, and you're going to get through the struggle together. And I think that strengthened this bond, and it made the music so much more special because that was something that we all shared together. And, that was something that we were fighting and striving for constantly. And like, I love the way Jared said, you know, you woke up every day knowing that that was your purpose. Like nothing else mattered.
Yeah.
Nothing else mattered at that time. And as far as we were concerned, that's why we were there.
I mean, I woke up early every morning so I could drive this motherfucker to work, Sammy.
Yeah, I appreciate that, by the way.
And Sam, you would always say, you don't have to do this. It's okay. You know, it's not that far. I can walk. I look forward to it. Like, it was something I wanted to do. I enjoyed our time together in the car where we could
and through everything in life, Jared, you know, and I wanted to say this on the record here. Look, dude, you were just such a rock for me.
Oh.
And that whole time, you know, because life was really hard, you know.
We watched each other cry a lot. We watched each other cry. There was a lot of crying that happened in my car. But yeah, we always made it through.
And how many times was it, you know, where we, you know, one person would think, you know, I think I should go home. I think I should go back to Bay City. And then it would take, you know, all of us rallying and saying, no, you know, you're here with us. We got you, you know. And because there were times like that. There were times where I didn't know how I was going to eat the next day, you know.
I mean, at the time, and this is something that, I mean, I know you and I talk to a degree, is I was getting sick and I didn't know why I was getting sick at the time. And there was a particular show I remember where while I was on stage, I blacked out. And I remember just waking up and my hand was grasping onto the microphone stand. And I was like, oh my God, the instrumental is almost over. And I shot back up and I did like the third verse, you know. And then thinking to myself, something's wrong. There were times where like I had to walk with a cane and I didn't know why. Like, why am I falling so much? You know, like, what's going on with me? And I was talking to my mom and she was just like, Jared, you need to get over here and figure out what's going on. And I remember I went to California to figure out what was going on. And they thought I had like Addison's disease. They weren't quite sure what. And at the time I wound up getting like athlete's foot, but it went like all the way up to my body, to like my hips, you know? And I remember, the day I found out like what my diagnosis was, and I won't go too much into it. I didn't know what to do. And then Joe called me, and Joe's the kind of guy who like, he will just do these small little things, but he wants you to know that he loves you, you know? And he called me and he's just like, man, I miss you so much. I can't wait for you to come home. And I just want you to know that I love you. And I remember saying to him, like, there is nothing I want more than to come back. You know, I am so sick of being here. I hate California. California is too much. And then actually it was right after that I found out what my diagnosis was. And I remember thinking like, oh shit, I'm going to die. And I remember thinking, I can't do that in front of these guys. I can't go back there and die in that shitty townhome and have them deal with it, have them go through with it. So I just disappeared. And I remember Sam calling me like 3-4 times a day, and I would have to ignore the calls. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. And I remember you sending me emails. I listened to every voicemail. I read every email. And I was just so scared. I didn't know what to say to you guys. And it was wild because I was there throughout all those fights, those times when I remember when Cody gave you that shiner, you know, gave you that black eye, and we would fight so much. And it was always, fuck you guys, I'm out, I'm leaving. And I was never the one to say that. I was always the one that's like, you guys, no, come on. Like, we got this, something's going to happen. And then I disappeared. And I mean, at the time things were getting bad, you know, with the band already, you know, we had our bad manager, and I know like we were going through some rough relationships, and I know like the drug use was starting to kind of ramp up with, you know, Cody and Joe, and that Joe was really starting to spiral. And like, we had just released an EP, and a lot of the lyrics from that EP was about how I felt like we were becoming bad people because we couldn't really, I didn't know how to hold on to the hope that like maybe we can get somewhere. So I think that instead we were kind of just turning to vice at that point. Like, that's what we were using to get by. And it was a really dark time. And I think me leaving just really put kind of a veil over everything. And kind of, I mean, I know you guys tried to carry on, but it was rough.
Definitely. And, you know, I remember being very angry.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I didn't know, he didn't share that he was ill. I just thought he was ditching us, you know, and I'm like, man, you know, he's the one that talked me into coming out here. And, you know, that's my brother. That's like family. It's like family abandoning you, you know. And obviously, if I would have known at the time the gravity of the situation, what was going on, I would have pulled in and done everything that I could. But, you know, I just remember being angry and bitter. There was a lot of bitterness for a while. And, you know, this thing that we held on to as our lifeline, you know, this band, because we really, that's all we had at the time, it was crumbling. You know, Jared, you were such a pivotal piece of that. That's what part of what made us so unique. And, you know, it felt like a divorce. It was really rough. And I remember us being really upset about it and very angry.
And the whole time, you know, my life was still not going well. I was living in my car, you know, like my family wasn't there, and it was just kind of, I couldn't, and I thought maybe, okay, you know, if I can get through this, because I knew I couldn't perform at the time. I was too sick. And my mind wasn't well, I wasn't okay. And I knew, like, if I can get better, maybe I can come back. But then I had nothing. And I was like, well, I can't even afford to come back. I don't have anything, you know? And I realized, like, and that's when I found out that also you guys had found another singer. And I was like, well, shit, you know, like it's too late for me now. And they've moved on, and it's, you know, they don't, and I'm sure they don't even want to hear from me. And I, you know, Sam stopped calling. They all stopped, you know, trying to message me and contact me. So I'm like, okay, they're over me. You know, and I'm sure they all hate me at this point. So I just tried to move on too. And I think that was kind of the worst part, was every day, Sam, I would think about you guys. Like every day I'd be like, I just wish I could be back in Denver. But feeling like I just did it all wrong. Like I really fudged this up. I should have told somebody, you know, how much I was struggling. I think like I would try, and I would just freak out and say crazy stuff to you, but I didn't know like how to even open up about, I'm not okay. Something's wrong with me and I don't know what, you know? But I know like Joe, like with between me and him, I know he was doing the same thing where he was just like, well, something's wrong, but I don't know how to say it. But when I left, I know that it became like visible. You guys could tell that Joe was struggling.
Yeah. So after Jared departed, and you know, there was just a huge mystery with that. Things just kind of shifted. We were still partying very heavily. There was a lot of alcohol and drug use and things of that nature. Joe would bring the most questionable people around. He started selling drugs, selling opiates. But he used more than he sold at the time. And I just remember one moment where we were in the living room, and Joe was, he always had a guitar in his hand, you know, but he was just nodding off on the couch, you know. Just a second before that, we were having a conversation, and it started to get really bad. We recruited a female lead singer. Her name was Hannah Hall. And we kind of changed our sound a little bit, became more pop funk than anything. We did some cool things. Joe still was an animal on the guitar. Cody, we still were challenging each other very, very much. So I started drumming and singing along with Hannah, and you know, we added a little bit of a hip hop influence to it. It was a cool sound. It wasn't the same as previously. It changed quite a bit, actually. We started playing shows again, getting busy again. We booked some shows out in the Midwest, in which, you know, we definitely went back to Michigan, and we finished in Michigan, and we were gonna spend some time with family and friends and head home. Well, we had just played a big festival in Freeland, Michigan. It's called Free Music Fest, and it was amazing. You know, we had this album that we had recorded called Funky Footed Creature. And we were really proud of it. We knew Joe had his struggles, but we were trying to work through them, trying to be uplifting, trying to keep him away from the questionable individuals in his life. It was always a struggle. It's time to leave. And we have everything packed up. Hannah had flown back to Denver, and we're saying our goodbyes, and me and Cody get in the van, and Joe is standing on a sidewalk still, and he puts his head down and he says, you know, I'm going to stay here. And we said, what? And you got to think, you know, this wasn't too far after Jared had left. So we're like, what? And he stood there and he said, I'm sick. And we were outside of his parents' house, and he turned around and he walked in the house. And I remember Cody and I, we got back in the van, and we had a really long drive ahead of us. We get on the highway. We didn't talk. It was this real silence. Kind of just fell over the whole day. And finally, we stopped. We stopped at a Buffalo Wild Wings somewhere out of town. I think we were in Indiana. And we just cried. We bawled our eyes out. We cried so hard. And we stopped and had some drinks. And we just said, what are we going to do now? We felt all of our hope just leave us, because we put everything into this music and this thing that we had, and it crumbled. And then, you know, at the same time, we're worried about our friend. We knew he was struggling with addiction. But at least he was at his parents' house. You know, they could look after him. We ended up going through the same thing, you know, where I would call and email and you know, try and get a hold of Joe. And, you know, finally he responded and wrote us a message that just kind of explained why he felt like he needed to leave. And, you know, his reasons were legitimate. He was really strung out, and he wanted to try and get his life back together. And he felt like he couldn't do that out in the environment where all the people that he knew were drug dealers. And, you know, he had us, but he couldn't be around that. You know, he needed to get away. He needed to kind of change his identity at the time and go back to a place that he knew and understood. And so he did end up cleaning up. He joined the military, actually, and really was on the straight and narrow for some time. He did that for a while. Cody and I once again started another band. Guy by the name of Mark Swihart, really talented guitar player. Called Grand Zelo. We did that for a while, and we kept in contact with Joe. But, you know, we always had to go back and play Bay City. So we went back and we played Bay City as Grand Zelo. And, you know, we had a really successful show at BMO's bar in Bay City. It was packed, and Joe came. And we played some old Fracas songs with Joe. And we reconnected with Joe. We started reconnecting. But we also noticed that Joe, something was off about him. You know, he had been out of the military for a little while now. And, you know, I straight up asked him. I was walking with him. And I said, Joe, are you using again? And he said, no, man, no. And everything about his demeanor pointed to him not being truthful to me. And, you know, everyone else that I was talking at the time said, no, he's really bad, guys. He's really bad. So I keep in contact with him. Come to find out, Joe had overdosed a couple of times and been revived. And his parents were really struggling taking care of him. He moved to a rehab center up in northern Michigan, Charlevoix, Michigan, which is in the middle of nowhere, what he had to get away. He had to, he was living with a friend named John Potter. And there were struggles, you know, where Joe, he had a beautiful Gibson semi-hollow Les Paul that was just gorgeous.
Gorgeous guitar.
He pawned it.
Pawned that guitar?
He pawned it for drug money. That was gone. He had a another hollow body, a blue hollow body that he used to play that his dad gave him on that. All of the things that meant so much to him, this drug was more important at the time. You know, that's addiction. You know, a lot of people don't necessarily understand addiction, but you're not the same person, and you know you don't want to get sick. You know, you don't want to feel what it feels like to not have this drug, and that you just. It doesn't even become about getting high anymore. It's, you know, you don't want to be sick. You know, you need this. Your body needs this, and it changes your way of thinking. So the band that Cody and I were playing in ends kind of abruptly after a few years. And Joe is still having struggles. And we reconnect. We keep reconnecting. We never completely lose touch with each other. And Joe reaches out to me. And by this time, I'm living, you know, I had purchased a home, and Cody's got kids, and, you know, we're living our lives, you know. And Joe reaches out to me and he says, "Sam, I'm going to die. I'm going to die here. I need help." And I said, "I'm booking you a plane ticket. You come live with me." I said, "I'm doing it right now." I said, "Just get your affairs in order. You're going to come live with me and I'll keep you in check. I'll help you get a job." Cody ended up helping get a job. But anyways, he hopped on a plane. He had his guitar and some clothes. And the look on his face when he saw me and Cody, we were reunited. He lit up. He was very thin at the time. And over the course of those months, I watched him gain his weight back. His face filled back out. He became the Joe that I knew and loved always. We were a band of brothers again. We're playing music all the time in another townhome in the basement. really loud. Except this time I got a noise complaint. But we were back, you know. We started performing. We felt like the world, the universe was back in place. Everything had fallen back into place. And, you know, the best part about it was I watched my friend, my brother, become sober, get his head back, and find a really good job, and be able to share and reminisce with him in this state that he was in. And it made my heart so happy. And once again, you know, Joe, like Jared mentioned earlier, he was always the most grateful person in the whole world. He wasn't just happy to see you. He was happy that you existed, that you were here on the planet. And he let you know that.
And he talking to him, it felt like a hug. You've said that.
It did.
It felt like a hug talking to him. He was so attentive. And you were the only person in the room when he spoke to you.
Yeah.
So he was just this, he really loved people. really, really loved people.
He expressed it. He expressed the love like nobody I've ever met. His playing came, I mean, he it's like he put all those years into his playing. We put something together called Sammy James and a Cup of Joe. I mean, at the time I had an acoustic project that I was doing, and he just kind of jumped on that. We started playing gigs with our friend Josh Hamilton, and we were playing the Oriental Theater in Denver. And I remember being backstage and jumping up and down with Joe. We wrote our name on the wall, just being so excited. And I'm like, wow, look at all, after all these years, Joe, look at, we're here right now. And we played a really cool show at the Oriental Theater. And we traveled back to Michigan and we played at BMO's. So that was like a blast from the past.
Not only that though, but like, I mean, things for him were up and up where he met a girl that
he did.
Things
he
were really hitting off with, and he became engaged.
Yeah.
With her. Yeah. So I mean, he was so really getting his act together.
He wasn't engaged yet. He was planning on proposing. He met Jessica, and he fell so in love with her, and we were all so happy for Joe. And you know, it felt so good to get that call, like, hey buddy, Sammy James. That's all that's really used to call me. Yeah, always Sammy James. And he'd say, you want to come over and jam, or come pick me up. let's jam. Let's play music, man. Let's do it. And it just felt so good to do that with him, because that's what we did. We used to, you know, I remember being a kid with Joe, and we'd stay up all night, just playing music and writing songs. And it was just such an incredible time. And you know, we seemed to be at such a high. We'd gotten our friend back and our brother back, and we had these big dreams and big hopes of getting Fracas back together, you know. And
is that when you reached out to me? I mean, it was around that time, and yeah. I don't even really remember the convo. I just remember us talking, and you convinced me to get on a plane and come to Denver.
Jared, we definitely talked about you and the possibility of getting the band back together when Joe was alive. You know, all that got cut real short, because, you know, you can't underestimate that drug ever. It's something that can creep up at the highest point in your life. And we were at such a high, and his girlfriend had gone out of town. I had just spoken to Joe on the phone. He said, "Hey man, you know, I got that call. Sammy James, you want to come jam?" It was a Thursday night, I believe. It was either Wednesday or Thursday night. And I had just worked a crazy shift at work, and I was tired. And I said, "Joe, you know, I got some time on Sunday. Let's jam on Sunday." And little did I know that was the last time I was going to talk to my fan. And I got a call from Cody the next day. I was at work, and he was shook. You know, he said, "Joe's gone. Joe passed away. Joe died last night." And I just remember the world just stopped, because, you know, I was like I mentioned, I was on such a high. You know, this was so surreal to me to have my brother's back, you know, and to hear that, I just remember, I said, I told people at my job. I had to go, and I don't think I've ever cried so hard in my life. And I went to Cody's, and we just embraced each other, and we fell on the floor. And what was so hard about that is Joe's parents didn't know. And we had to break the news to his parents. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my whole life. And the world stopped, our whole world just stopped. And we went from a high to a very, very low. And we had two services. We had one here in Colorado, and we flew back to Michigan. We had a service there in which all of those old faces showed up and shared how Joe had affected their life. Because one thing that I want everybody to understand about this individual is, you know, when I think of Joe, I don't think of Joe, the man who struggled with drugs. That's not a first thought. It's not even a second thought. You know, I think of somebody who was extremely unique, who loved with his whole heart, who had a talent that I've never seen before. Somebody whose personality would stick with you. And he made you feel like you were the only person in the room when he was talking to you. And he had this way about him where you just always thought, you know, that guy, even if he's struggling, he's going to be all right. Because he always had this positive attitude and passion, you know, passion. And, you know, that's what I think about with Joe, you know. And we reached out to Jared. And Jared, you actually came to Denver, and Cody.
Yeah. Sitting at the airport on my way to go to Denver was when I got the call from you, Sam. Sam had called me and said, you know, Joe is gone. And I remember falling on the floor. I remember I fell on my knees, and I just kept saying, like, what? Like, what do you mean? You know? And I remember, like, there was a woman in front of me who was, she had like a baby with her, and she like took her baby and like went away. but I remember when I got to Denver that all of us sat together at this restaurant, like on a balcony somewhere. And we were all sitting at a table, and, you know, it was you and Cody opposite of me. And then next to me was just this empty chair. And I remember, like, I was so occupied, like everything you two were saying, I just remember thinking about, like, Joe should be in this chair. And I was like trying my best not to fall to pieces, you know? And at that moment, this homeless man had come up behind you, Sam, and Cody, and lied down and began masturbating. Like, very, very vigorously. And I just, like, I couldn't focus now on the chair. I couldn't focus on what you were saying. I was just doing everything I could, because you both were like sad, you know, but I was just trying not to burst into laughter watching this homeless guy. And like, by the time I could say anything, he was like already done. And he was just sitting, and he like looked at me when he was done. But it just felt like such like Joe was there in that shenanigan. That just seemed like that had Joe vibes all over it, just the madness and insanity of it all. But, you know, it's so wild. I think about how Joe struggled to talk about his struggles, and it took a long time for him to come to you and open up about it and be honest about it. And I remember, you know, when I was sick, it took me so long to even talk about it, and I couldn't tell you guys. I was too scared, and I didn't know how. And I just feel like all of those things, you know, now that losing Joe has to mean something. And I always think about that. Like, this has to change me. I can't be the same person anymore. Like, Joe deserves that. You know, he's somebody who has impacted me enough in my life. You know, his little Korean fish and all the other wild, crazy things that he had done. And, you know, yeah, there was so many things that were completely meaningless and strange and nonsensical about him. And you can't come in contact with somebody like Joe who has that kind of talent and raw emotion and be unchanged. And losing him, I can't be the same person that I was, you know? And I remember, you know, we were talking about getting the band back together and doing all of this. And the conversation went from that to how are we going to commemorate this? How are we going to a show that honors him? And, you know, next year we wound up doing that show in Bay City at BMO's, which is where we had our first show, or I had my first show with all of you. And it was so wild seeing everyone there. And we raised, like, how much money? We raised a ton of money for this.
Yeah, it was a good amount, in the thousands
somewhere. Yeah. And I remember at the show, I remember saying, like, you know, this isn't over. And I still really believe that. I know, like, I live in Chicago, you live in Denver, and we're all over the place, but, you know, we're people who share this experience living in that house together. Like, you don't leave that house unchanged, and you don't leave that house without being kind of connected forever. So I think that, you know, we still talk about making music together, and I still plan on doing that. Like, Sam, you know, you're somebody who is just forever.
You anytime, brother. Yeah,
anytime. And I mean, you know, like, you could show up at my house anytime. Doesn't matter what's going on. Like, you get the guest room. If there's someone else in there, they're sleeping on the couch, you know?
But that's the thing too, is, you know, every time we do get together, we pick up right where we left off. Like, for instance, you know, not only with you, but with Cody, if Cody and I start playing together, I mean, we pick up on the last groove that we were jamming the last, you know, however long that was. There's a certain telekinesis about, you know, playing with musicians where you don't have to give them a signal to change the key, yeah, change the tempo. It happens. It happens very naturally. We had a very special musical bond. And, you know, I feel like there's a spirituality to that. There's something more to that, where you're connected in a different way. It's very special. It's something that I, you know, anything that I do, I can't help but think about it. And I write songs about it, you know?
Yeah.
I write songs about these guys all the time.
You have some good ones out there. And I mean, yeah, I'm so grateful that I got to even, like, hear them. And I mean, I don't know. I should probably at some point, Trent, I should provide you with, like, links to our stuff.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. Because a lot of it, especially Sam's work, you know, has a lot to do with what we've been through. You have a song specifically about, like, coming to Denver and all that. Yeah.
It's actually not released yet. Oh.
Well, shoot, I shouldn't even talk about it.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I've got some videos, like on YouTube that when I'm performing.
It's wild because when I was in Denver visiting, after Joe passed, I remember sitting in Sam's living room, the very room that, you know, you are seeing now, Sam sitting in. I was sitting where Sam is sitting. And he was just like, hey, man, I got to play you these songs. And I remember hearing them and being so blown away, because not only is it like 100% Sam, you know, I could hear the little twangs and little pieces that were definitely like Joe-isms. And I love the fact that Joe has left a irreversible impact on your musicianship. and that it's kind of, you know, we have to carry him with us. You know, whenever we do anything musically, like, he's a part of it. And my expectation now is that I need everything Joe-ified before it can ever be, you know, see the light of day. It needs that Joe-ification, and for it not to have that just drives me crazy. Cause I'm always thinking, you know, what would Joe do, you know? Mm-hmm. Because he'd always do something so wild and special and unique.
Let's not leave you out of this thing, either. Jared presented me with, some songs that he had written. And, you know, one thing that I've always loved about you, dude, is the way that, your lyrics make you think. There's always such a deeper meaning to your lyrics, but you leave it up for interpretation too, which is what I've always loved about your writing style. And
well, that's rock and roll, man. It's always cryptic, man. You know, there's layers. It's an onion. And you know, there's a lot of people who are like, is this song about just moving a chair or is it about trust? How will we ever know? You know. So yeah, that's how you know you got a good song, is when it seems stupid at face value, but if you sit down, if you, like, you know, really burn one, you'll be like, wait a minute, this is about something, you know? So that's good music. That's good music. But yeah, I don't know how to put a bow on this conversation. I really don't.
Well, let me put the bow on it for
Please
you.
Please help us, Trent.
So, because it sounds like you guys really did have this brotherhood. And let me just first start by saying that I appreciate that you guys just took over, because I had some stuff just like jotted down. And then as you were talking, I would jot some more stuff down, but then I would start to cross it out because I'd be like, oh, perfect. They're going with it. Like, they've already answered the questions I've started to write down. So thank you for taking over. I really appreciate that. I will say the one question I do still have, is what do you want people to take away from this when they listen, whether it's something that maybe you have talked about or something you haven't talked about? What do you each want people to take away when they listen to this?
Let me start. And then Sam, you can go. Is, you know, I think a lot of the suffering that we went through as a band was, at least between Joe and myself, I think this is something that him and I both dealt with, was we struggled to share our pain. And I think it's ironic in one way, because he was such an expressive person. And if you heard him play the guitar, you knew he was feeling things, you know? And I think, like, when you heard me sing, there was a lot of emotion in just every note, but to actually tell someone, like, this is what I'm going through and this is how I'm hurting and this is what I need help with. I was so afraid of opening up to anyone about me being sick. And Joe was so afraid to open up, you know, to us about his addiction until much, much, much later on. And I think if we would have been able to really talk about it sooner, things would have gone a lot better for both of us. I think we would have avoided a lot of pain and suffering in our life. It got, you know, these were, you know, Cody and Sam were people who could be trusted. You know, it wasn't even that. It was just, we were so scared of having it found out, the shame of that. But there is no shame in looking for help. And if there's anything that can come of this, that can be learned, I think, is that you really know who you can trust and trust them with those things. You know, there is no secret that is too disgusting or terrifying or confusing or strange. There's someone there who will hear it, you know, and there are people out there who can give you the help that you need. You just need to find those people. And I wish if I had a time machine, you know, I wish that I could sit Joe down and be like, hey, we're fucked up. Like, we need to figure this out, you know? That's I think would be the moral of the story for me.
I'm with you, Jared. You know,
oh, Sam, your mic is, like, weird. There's something, like, blocking your mic. I don't know.
Technology.
Say something.
Hear me?
kind of.
It did change a little bit. I know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Say something.
Do I still sound weird?
Yeah.
Yeah, but just roll just with roll it. With I'll it. I'll, yeah. I'll bounce you up a little bit.
Okay. Well, I guess just for everybody who's listening to this, I mean, listening to our story, key points are there were wounds where people were hurt, people were struggling. And if, you know, think about Jared before he left back to California, you know, there's people that love people, there's people who care about you, there's resources, you know, talk about it. Don't be afraid to reach out. Somebody loves you. Promise you. Somebody loves you. Somebody will love you through. But you know, I lost my best friend. But you know what? Never stopped love. Never gave up on. You know, sometimes it's a push to that point. But talk about. Don't act like everything's okay when it's not. That's gonna eat you alive. Reach out. Don't let it be. There's people right alongside you. Right alongside you. Courage. I want courage.
I think it's a lot easier to have a difficult conversation with somebody than to go to their funeral, you know? Yeah. And I think if you're somebody who's experiencing and in the midst of addiction or depression or anything really rough, I think it's really important to be just loyal to your sadness, you know, to be just loyal to the things that kind of drag you down, like call those things out and abandon those things. I mean, there's so much like hopelessness in this world. It's really easy to lose hope. And you have to think about like, what is it that you gain from hopelessness, but what is it that you gain from hope? And I think you really have to weigh that. Like, it is just a state of mind, but you have so much more to gain if you allow yourself to feel hope in situations where things aren't always looking so great. And like Sam said, you know, there are people who love you. There are definitely people who love you out there. You may feel like it's not the people you want, it's not the right people, or there's too many people who don't, whatever. You know, you have to hold on to the hope that there's people out there who love you and can help you through these things. You have a lot to gain from holding on to hope.
I appreciate you both so incredibly much for having the conversation with me this evening, or whenever people decide to listen to this. A fun thing that I like to do so that every episode is my guest's own, I'm going to let you guys do the sign off for the episode.
Well, I should talk about, you know, our music. If anyone is interested in hearing our music, Frokus, F-R-O-K-U-S, it's on Spotify. That is Joe on the guitar. And then my music is Invot, I-N-V-O-T. Sam, yours is Sammy James, right?
Sammy James Strudgeon, S-T-R-U-D-G-E-O-N.
Yeah.
Spotify, Apple Music, in all the social media platforms. But yeah, definitely check us out. Appreciate everybody listening, being able to tell our story. And we got plenty of more crazy stories, so reach out.
Next week on the Trent Speaks podcast.
If the dog don't urinate in 24 hours, you have to put him down.
Kill him, man.
You have to put him down.
We're in the process of a lawsuit. He was trying to literally go to the bathroom, but he was yelping. Your pet is your family, so you know everything that's going on with them. You watch everything. You know something's not right, something's wrong. You know it. And so my wife, and we knew he was getting worse. Like, he wasn't getting better.